Lawrence Brewer is a prisoner in Texas. By the end of the show, he'll be dead. This is Execution Watch. Huntsville, Texas, death penalty capital of the Western world, where final preparations are underway to execute Brewer by injecting him with massive doses of drugs made to save lives. Over the next hour, KPFT's Execution Watch will provide live coverage and commentary on the state killing. Execution Watch host Ray Hill, legal analyst Jim Skelton, with guest attorneys Susan Ashley and Larry Douglas, Huntsville reporter outside the death house Gloria Rubeck, Houston Vigil reporter Dave Atwood, and special guest Dr. Dennis Longmire, a professor of criminal justice at Sam Houston State University. He'll discuss the devastating financial cost of the death penalty system. The Execution Watch begins.
Welcome to Execution Watch. This is Ray Hill. I'm the host of the program. I have with me a full cast of characters. We have Jim Skelton and Douglas Ashley, whose voice you just got through hearing, and Larry Douglas, whose voice you just got through hearing. Susan Ashley, who is those three are attorneys. We'll be talking to Dennis Longmire. Dick Gregory is going to be on our show today via Dave Atwood, who is at one of the vigils in Huntsville for this execution of Lawrence Russell Brewer. Lawrence Russell Brewer, who is now 43 years old and will get no older because he is in the process of being executed even now. We're waiting a word from Gloria Rubeck at the Huntsville demonstration to let us know what the progress of things are there. We also would like to remind you that Lawrence Russell is there for the killing of James Byrd. James Byrd's death in Jasper, Texas, was a famous worldwide case because of the racial motivation of the incident, the particular horror of that case. Lawrence Russell is one of three men that were involved and ultimately charged and convicted for that case, and so we bring that to your attention. Again, we're waiting on word from Elizabeth, her contact with Gloria, to give us some feedback on what is going on in Huntsville. How this usually happens is we're waiting word for Huntsville that there is a crossing of the road of the witnesses from the media and the witnesses, if any, from Mr. Brewer, and when that happens, that means the process has begun. From that point on, we track the process in Huntsville as best we can. We will have an explanation of what happened in the case. We'll have an explanation of the evolution of the case through the courts. Apparently, at this time, Mr. Brewer has decided to become a death row volunteer. That is a phrase that is used to refer to people who have asked that their appeals stop. And so he is, as of this afternoon, had nothing pending in any court. And so the chances of this execution being blocked through court action is very rare. Last week we had, last night we had a case, we did not do a show because the case was pending. So let's see, let's do, who we got? Dave Atwood, okay. Okay. And Dave, are you there? Dave.
Yes.
Can you hear me?
I can, Ray.
Okay, where are you?
I am up in front of the walls unit.
Okay, what is going on, Dave?
Well, we've got what I would call a first-class mess up here. We have protesters. I've never seen so many police officers in all my life. State troopers, Texas Rangers, prison guards, a mixture of protesters. I think they're expecting some big, horrible thing happening here. I don't think it's going to happen, but they, a lot of protesters, we were trying to guess maybe 100 or so, not a monstrous amount, but at least 100, maybe a little bit more than that. And then almost as many police and almost as many news media.
Okay.
So it's been a really crazy time, Ray.
Well, I'd like to remind the people that are listening that we are broadcasting this live from KPFT Studios on HD 3 channel. And we're also, oh, by the way, thank you. I just got a news flash. The other major case that is happening today, Troy Davis just, they announced, has a stay.
A
stay of execution. Troy Davis has received a stay of execution Georgia.
A stay of execution.
And so that was literally a last-minute stay because his execution was to have begun 5 minutes ago.
Well, that's good news.
And
great.
So you can get all of that on Democracy Now! A website after you hear this edition of Execution Watch. Amy Goodman is in Georgia covering that event, as is Rachel Maddow. And some other folks that we know. But the Troy Davis stay of execution has just been announced.
Everybody's clapping here, Ray.
Okay.
Yeah, everybody's very happy. Thank you for the news.
Okay. Now, tell me, can you sort the demonstrators or the vigilants there for the execution from those who are opposed to it, or is it one of a kind?
Oh, just about. 99% everybody that's here is against the execution.
Against the execution of Brewer. Is it a pretty mixed crowd, Dave?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, we've got, I'm sitting right next to Dick Gregory, and he's holding court with about almost 8 or 10 young African-American women that are just here to see him, to listen to him. And but I would say that just about... 99% of the people here, I would say, are against the death penalty for not only Troy Davis, but also for Brewer.
Dave, has the media crossed the street?
No, they haven't. We're waiting for that, Ray, and it has not happened yet. One of the things that's interesting right now, when they do cross, if they do, which I'm assuming they probably will, but there are about 7 or 8 Texas Rangers right up at the door going into the prison. Now, I don't know why they're there, but I've never seen them there before, quite frankly.
Well, I can't figure it out either, except that Brewer and at least one of his other co-defendants were pretty well connected in the Aryan Brotherhood KKK circle, and maybe they were expecting those folks to show up, but you haven't seen... any evidence of that, have you?
No evidence whatsoever of any KKK, Aryan Brotherhood, or anything like that at this point.
Well, it has been my experience that law enforcement officers tend to exaggerate the real amount of a threat that may exist, and so they would rather be overprepared than underprepared. So maybe that's what all the personnel with all of the hardware is all about. I do not think that even, and I know a lot of dumb KKKers because, I mean, after all, there's Louis Beam that bombed this radio station and other friends of mine. I don't know of any of them that are stupid enough to think that they can make a frontal assault in the walls.
Right, I agree. Hey, Ray, let me mention something to you. If my phone kicks out for some reason, can I give you another telephone number?
Well, Gloria has one, 409. No.
58.
Okay. We have a 409 number here. That's Dick's phone.
And the rest of it's 658-1949.
Yeah, well, we just gave Dick Gregory's telephone number out over the website.
But no, it's not his number. It's another person. But
okay.
If it happened to disappear off this... it will be because my phone has been, out of juice. We're okay right now.
Excuse me, I've got another announcement to make. We just got word this time from Amy Goodman, broadcast on KPFT while we were doing this, that saying that the earlier announcement that there was a stay was premature, and Amy is now saying there is no stay. So, sorry about the false alarm there. I'll have my information source tighten up and await for verification before we get it out on the air. But we try to be as accurate here as possible. Okay, does Mr. Gregory want to talk to the listeners of Execution Watch?
Yeah, he's ready to do it.
Okay.
I better alert him what I told him about Troy Davis is not.
Okay. Right. Yeah, sure. But tell him that Amy is now reporting on broadcast that the rumors of this day were not valid.
Yeah. Okay. You want to talk to him right now?
Sure. If you got time.
Hold on. Just a minute. Are you on an interview right now?
No.
Because somebody at KPFT would like to talk to you. Yeah.
Okay, he's trying to get Dick Gregory on the line so that we can chat with him. He is...
Just a second.
Okay, thank you. And David's explaining to him, I can hear it in the background, that this earlier announced stay was not valid.
God bless.
Dick Gregory.
Yes, sir.
This is Ray Hill. I am the host of...
Hold it, 1 minute.
Yes, sir.
Okay, I'm here.
Mr. Gregory, this is Ray Hill. I'm the host of Execution Watch in Houston, Texas.
Yes.
You must have had divided interest today because there's certainly things going on in Georgia and things going on over here. Do you mind telling me why you made the decision to come to Texas?
Oh, I made the decision to come to Texas a long time ago. I have people that scout stuff all over the world that I trust, and they say, hey, you need to be here. I came in here yesterday to do a rally in Jasper, Texas, and lay a wreath on Mr. Byrd's grave, and then come here. I'm against capital punishment. I'm making it where I am. Killing by the state is wrong. I mean, you got a right to give me life in jail. That's punishment. When you give me death, that's revenge. If me and you is in the army and we get captured by the enemy, they don't have no right to snatch our teeth out and throw acid on us. There's international laws that's against revenge. And so I was against capital punishment when I had a gun in my house. I just didn't believe at that time the state has a right to kill me. My mama don't have a right to be on drugs and alcohol and drunk and tell me I can't do it. Mama, I'm following you. The state has no legal moral reason to kill somebody and tell me I can't do it. So I've always been, and now I'm nonviolent now, but before I was nonviolent, I never understood how the state can kill somebody and tell me I couldn't.
Mr. Gregory, this case created a lot of brouhaha as was coming down. I'm sure that wasn't exclusive to Texas, but all over the country. It was a particularly horrendous trial case. A horrible thing happened, and apparently some youngsters got hopped up and went crazy with this citizen of Jasper who died a horrible death. And you and I agree on the issue of capital punishment, but this case carries an onerousness to it.
I'm on the radio right now.
Yeah, you're on the radio, and this case has an onerous to it.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
This case has an onerous to it.
Yeah.
And you are here. What does your presence, what is the statement of your presence in this case?
Well, let me put it this way. They found out Hitler was not dead, and they found him in Texas 5 years ago and sentenced him. I would be here saying killing is wrong. There ain't no such thing as a good killing by the bad killing by the state. That's stuff we want to do so we can live with ourselves. I don't understand how my mom could cry over the crucifixion of Christ, but she was for capital punishment. The state killed Jesus Christ, mugged to death and run down by some drunken chariot driver. And if Jesus Christ came back to America, bugged the wrong people, they'd give him the electric chair.
Well, I would imagine that's probably true. That would happen.
All killing by the state is wrong.
Well, Mr. Brewer apparently has become kind of a volunteer because he asked that all appeals cease and desist.
Asked that all appeals be what?
Cease.
Oh, lots of people did that. A whole lot of people said, I don't want no appeal. Why? There's a whole lot of brothers be killed in the electric chair and have to spend the rest of their life in jail. You know, capital punishment hasn't deterred nobody from anything.
Okay. Is Dave available again?
Just a minute.
And so we're waiting on Dave. The question producer wants to ask is, have the witnesses crossed
the
street?
Oh, I'm back on.
Dave, has the witness crossed the street? Has there been any action there? The witnesses have crossed the street.
Right.
Okay, well, what we're going to do here is we're going to come back to the studio and explain the case to the listeners, and we'll be back to you later. If the witnesses come out, please call us as quickly as possible on the regular KPFT number, 713-526-5738.
And Ray, there still seems to be confusion regarding Troy Dick.
I'm sure there's confusion, but I have not heard any additional word. And what's happening here, Dave, is on the broadcast channel in HD1, we are covering what is going on in Georgia. And on the HD3 channel and on executionwatch.org, we're covering what's going on where you are.
Yeah.
So we're on top of it. If there's anything else to announce, I'll have, if we get some good word from over there, I will have, because, see, they don't have a sign like crossing the road like we have here in Texas.
Yeah.
If that happens, I will ask that Elizabeth give you a call. Okay?
Okay. Let me know. All right. Thank you, Ray.
Please. All right. Thank you. And that was Dave Atwood and famous comedian Dick Gregory. Well, Susan Ashley, what happened in this case?
What happened in this case is on June 7, 1998, there was a man named James Byrd. He was 49 years old at the time. He accepted a ride from three men, Sean Berry, Lawrence Brewer, and John King. Berry was driving the truck, and he was acquainted with Byrd from folks that know each other around town. Instead of taking Byrd home, the three men took Byrd to a remote country road out of town, and they beat him with a baseball bat and other objects. After he was beaten unconscious, they urinated on his body. They chained him by his ankles to their pickup truck, and they dragged him for 3 miles. Brewer later claimed that Byrd's throat had been slashed by Berry before he was dragged. However, the forensic evidence suggested that Byrd had been attempting to keep his head up while being dragged. An autopsy suggested that Byrd was alive during much of the dragging. Byrd died after his right arm and his head were severed from his body after his body hit a culvert while he was being dragged. This resulted in Byrd's head being decapitated. Berry, Brewer, and King dumped Byrd's mutilated body in front of a African-American cemetery, and the three men went to a barbecue. Along the area where Byrd was dragged, authorities found a wrench with the word Berry written on it. And they also found a lighter, cigarette lighter, that was inscribed with the word possum, which was King's prison nickname. The following morning, Byrd's limbs were found scattered across the road they dragged him on. Police found 75 places on the road that remains of Byrd's body were left. The local authorities contacted the FBI within 24 hours of finding Byrd's body. Now, when the FBI got involved, they essentially investigated further. They found that King had several tattoos that would be considered racist. One was a black man hanging from a tree. There were Nazi symbols, word Aryan pride, and a patch of a white supremacist inmates group called the Confederate King Knights of America. There was a jailhouse letter that was written to Brewer that was intercepted by jail officials. In that letter, King expressed pride in the crime and said that he thought that they had made history. Anyway, essentially, it would be fair to say there was other evidence that would essentially indicate that there was racist motivation for the crime. So what ended up happening is all three men were convicted of this crime. King was given a death sentence. Brewer was given a death sentence. And Berry was given a life sentence.
And so there was some boasting of the racial intent of all of this.
Yes.
And kind of the self-aggrandizement of people who's being fed by their prejudice think it's good. Jim? What happened in the evolution of the legalities of this case?
Well, you talked about him volunteering to die and not wanting appeals. He did pretty much the same thing after the direct appeal. Because of, and you and I got the impression from looking at this case and from what I read about it, that he, Brewer, was pretty well disgusted with the legal system. Because here's what happened. Those listeners who don't know it, this occurred in a county, a little town called Jasper. And like it or not, believe it or not, that's considered one of the hotbeds of racial activity in Texas. In fact, the most notorious town, as you well know, is a little town called Viator outside of Beaumont. And Jasper is just north of there, and this is in a real, real area that's considered extremely racial. A lot of the Ku Klux Klan people still live there, and it's kind of what we call in deep East Texas, and those more progressive call it behind the Piney Wood Curtain. They just don't trust it up there. And what happened, you get the impression that Jasper had an inferiority complex, and they did everything they could, much like Dallas did when Kennedy was assassinated, to prove they weren't racial or prove they weren't crazy and right-wing nuts. They wanted to be able to kill these guys with immunity to kind of justify and cleanse their hands of it, because there's no doubt that it was a racial killing, because both Brewer and King had both been in the penitentiary. Both of them had been involved in racial activities in the penitentiary, King more so than Brewer. And King claimed he had been gang raped by a group of African Americans. That probably is not true, but he was really, really, really very much a racist. And what happened, they got together and both of them got out of prison and moved to an area of Texas that would welcome people like them, that would find homes for them. Well, what happened, Jasper County changed the case on a change of venue. It's transferred down to Brazoria County. And again, those of you who are not familiar with the geography of Texas, that's where a lot of our prison units are located. So what you end up, you go in from being tried in a town of Jasper, you go to a town of being tried in Brazoria County, where a substantial number of people work for the prison, rely upon the prison. And, of course, Brewer gets the death penalty. And then he, after the direct appeal and after his trial, he was apparently, from what I've been able to find out and read, Brewer was pretty disgusted with the legal representation that he got both at trial and direct appeal. And he would not cooperate with the writ lawyers, because as you well know, after you finish a direct appeal, you have a whole series of writs both in state and federal court. And he just finally said, to hell with all of you. You know, none of you are helping me. And he wouldn't even cooperate with the writ lawyers. As a result of that, the appellate path was extremely short. There was a direct appeal. The case was affirmed. After that, there was a writ filed in state court. The writ was denied. A writ filed in federal court. That writ was denied. And that's it. There were none of the stuff that you often read and read about in all these cases of a whole bunch of writs being filed, of last-minute stays being talked about. There was no appeal to the Board of Pardons and Paroles, because they probably, you need to go somewhere, right?
Yeah. Does a case go through that route, whether the defendant wants it to or not?
The direct appeal goes through that route, whether the defendant wants to or not. You cannot, if you want to die, you have to have a direct appeal. Now, at that point, you can say, I don't want any writs filed. But apparently some people volunteered to do a writ for Byrd, and he just simply wouldn't cooperate with them. But they were so zealous, they did the writs anyway. But they never, there's only one writ filed in state court, one writ filed in federal court, and that's it. There are no subsequent writs filed. When all the new Supreme Court cases came out on the death penalty, they pretty well ignored that. And I got the impression that Brewer was pretty well thought that regardless of what he had done, his fate was sealed. Because Jasper is trying to erase its image of being a racial town by giving him, make sure he got the death penalty.
Well, didn't essentially King say that? King said that what we've done is important and I may die for this.
Well, but King was proud of it. Now, Brewer, contrary to that, Brewer was not and didn't boast as much as King did. King thought it was a great thing. Said, if I have to die for it, I'm dying for a good cause. And that will show that, you know, that our group, that group, that whatever group it was in Jasper, apparently it was a group of three at the most, but a group of two, that they would rise up, and he said he would go to his death gladly, being proud of the fact that he is involved in killing this black man. And what was not mentioned, this is one of the sad things about it, This poor gentleman, Bird, that was killed, apparently was also mentally handicapped on top of that.
And he had been to prison.
Right. And he also knew the kid, the young kid that didn't, the kid by the name of Barry, knew him from the little town of Jasper. And that's probably why he got into the car with him. And I was unaware of this, but Larry Douglas was telling me earlier that in the African-American community, there's that kind of standard joke that black folks never get in car with white folks. They just don't do that. They got better sense. I'd like for Larry to comment on that a little bit.
Well,
later.
We're going to get Larry to comment on a lot of stuff here. But the thing about it is, during the heat of the news media of what's right. went on in Jasper, I received a letter from an inmate on the Darrington. Mm-hmm. And he said that he knew that one of the defendants had encountered Bird while they were both doing time on the Darrington. Now, if you know anything about Texas prisons, the Darrington at that time would have been, you had to screw up pretty seriously to get to the Darrington. It was a place where you go if you had...
Kind of like the old Ellis unit.
It's kind of like the old Ellis unit. It was super security, and the Darrington still is super security, and I'm knowing full well that not tonight, but at some future date, people on the Darrington's going to be hearing this broadcast. But also, I'd like to do this routine. Excuse me, now I have to go because we have Dave Atwood. Dave, are you there?
I'm here, Ray, still.
What's happened?
And the witnesses have come out, so as far as I can tell, Ray, the execution here has taken place.
The execution is complete. Did you see any witnesses for Brewer?
No. But I wasn't really close enough.
Yeah, you've got a bigger crowd than usual.
Yeah, it would have been hard to. If there was somebody in there, it would have been hard to identify, I think.
Well, when they came out, Grazik and probably more media than usual this time.
Yeah, tremendous amount of media here.
Yeah. When they came out, they weren't followed by another group as far as you can tell.
I couldn't see any other group, no.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your letting us know that the process has been completed, and I want to thank you for your services. Please give our regards to the other vigilants there.
I certainly will. We've got a lot of wonderful people up here today. So,
and I know that the Texas Coalition Against the Death Penalty had something to do with making sure that Mr. Gregory is treated welcomely here.
He's something else. I mean, it's been a pleasure to be with him. I've been with him for 18 hours now in this fast and vigil. And
did you go with him to Jasper?
He's still going strong, and I'm getting weak.
Yeah, did you go with him to Jasper?
Huh?
Did you go with him to Jasper?
No, I did not.
Okay. Well,
last night.
Dave, how do people get in touch with you through the coalition?
TCADP.org. TCADP.org.
Texas Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty.
Right.
TCADP.org.
Correct.
Thank you very much, Dave. Give Mr. Gregory our appreciation for what it is. Thank you.
I certainly will. Thank you, Ray.
Okay, bye-bye. And that was Dave Atwood, and what we are told is that the execution is over. If Mr. Brewer had any family witnesses there, what happens at this point is Carnes Funeral Services, who has the contract, will pick up the body and take it to the Huntsville Funeral Home, where there is a special viewing room set up for people who have been executed, and the family of the person executed then rush to the funeral home to feel the body while it is still warm, has the warmth of life in it. I know that's morbid, but you've got to understand that if there are family members, the people have not been able to touch that person for the entire time they are on Texas death row. There are no visits. I listened to a news report earlier that Troy Davis spent several hours with his family all together in a room without separation of bars or anything, in a reception room they have in Georgia where people about to be executed, they can spend some time with their family. I know that in Louisiana prison, there's a room set aside for people who are about to be executed to spend some quality direct contact time with their families. Nothing like that happens in Texas. We're a very different state in that regard. Jim, do you have anything to add at this point before we bring Larry in?
Yeah, I want to mention one thing I failed to mention earlier. Probably of these three people, King was probably the most avid racist, only a 23-year-old man. And after that would probably come Brewer. In fact, Brewer initially, well, he admitted being present when this occurred, and he claimed that he tried to stop them, kind of laid the blame off primarily on King and upon Barry. Barry, at least from what I've been able to read, the reason he didn't receive the death penalty, they couldn't prove any racial organizations he was a part of. Byrd was easy, Brewer was easy. Mm-hmm. But when it came to the young kid, and he was only 23 years old, Barry, they couldn't prove that he was involved with any racial group. Why he was running with those two, no one knows that. But that's the reason he received life without parole. And from my understanding, when able to find out about it, because of the nature of this killing, he's not living a very pleasant life because he's in segregation. He's isolated from all the population because surely somebody would kill him if they got out in general population. So he's not living a very comfortable life, although he's gotten married by proxy at this point. And King is still awaiting, but King is probably the most culpable if you want to talk about the biggest racist. After that would come Brewer, then Barry, we don't know.
Well, King will ultimately show up on our calendars.
Absolutely.
So that's going to happen.
Now, I don't know if he's been like Brewer, pretty well disgusted with the system and said, to hell with you, I'm going to die. I don't know if he's taken that step yet, but King is going
to... Let me explain to the audience. I mean, you're living on death row. That is not a good place to live. I mean, what they say about Mr. Barry living in solitary confinement is... A couple of steps different from general population. But on death row, it's even worse. On death row, it is almost total isolation. And you live like that, life gets to be rather frustrating. And whenever you sit down, if you got any sense at all, and say, I'm going to live this way until they kill me, and what are my chances? It, considering the evidence of this case and the publicity of this case, ever seeing the outside again, you come to the conclusion the quickest way out of here is the route I want to take.
And I think that, plus the felt like he had been not given a fair shake with the lawyers appointed, not given a fair shake by anybody. I thought he was pretty contemptuous of the legal system, and perhaps his justification, that I don't know. I think that added to it also.
Well, I want your opinion. What do you do if you're a lawyer and you get a case like this?
I ask, like, I pray to get off of it. I mean, I hope he dies early death, as best I can tell you. There's not much you can do, because the problem is, it's like the same situation you're in when you have a client that refuses to take a plea bargain you know that's good for him. I was talking to a lawyer the other day, tried to get a guy to take was offered a misdemeanor. A guy turned it down and gets a life sentence. And in cases like that, you are duty-bound to do what your client wants to do. If, for example, the client wants to testify and you think it's the worst mistake he could make, you cannot stop it. It's your job to warn him, but let him do it. By the same token, if you're a lawyer, And the guy says, I don't want any more appeals. I don't want you to do anything. You can talk to him till you're blue in the face, but if he sticks with it, your obligation is do what the client wants, because you represent him and not your particular interest. That's all you can do. You can just stand back and do what Daryl Royal did, quick kick. That's about all you can do.
Well, what do you do if you're the trial lawyer in this case?
Well, let me give you a good example. You recall we had the Butts case a couple of days ago that was chained. That was
Butts case.
Butts got a stay of execution. I talked to the trial lawyer today, this afternoon, the Jerry Guarino. And Jerry was offered a life sentence in that case. Well, in the Butts case, those of you who don't recall it, he shot and killed two people, one of whom was his sister.
Three people. He shot his sister,
yeah,
and he killed two people.
Shot three. Shot his sister, didn't kill her, and shot two other people. Chased a woman down and shot her in front of her own child. And he's caught at the scene, and everybody knows it's him. And that's a capital murder case. You've killed more than two people in one criminal episode. The minimum you can get is a life sentence. They offered him life, and he wouldn't take it. And they did everything in their power to get him to take a life sentence. He wouldn't do it. And that's his choice. As I've often said, the Constitution gives you the right to be a raving idiot if you choose to do so. And you've got to abide by that client's choice. And he did. He ends up getting the death penalty. So by the same token, when you have an appeal like this, and they do not want to appeal any further, then your obligation is to abide by your client's wishes. And as Susan said, they have to put a sack over your head and hope nobody recognizes you. That's about the best you can do.
All right. We have from World News, ABC World News. So that's a credible source, that Troy Davis' execution was delayed tonight as the Supreme Court weighed arguments from Davis's legal team and the state of Georgia over whether or not he deserves a stay. And that is, as far as tonight is concerned, a durable stay, but at any time tonight, within the next 7 hours, they may decide to go on and go through his execution. We have had all of that happen on the execution watch before. We had the Supreme Court delay a case, and we waited, and some 2 hours after we were off the air, they gave the procedures. The window in Texas is between 6 o'clock and 11:15 because the prison system says, yeah, it is statutorily 12 o'clock, but we don't have time to prepare for an execution after 11:15. So the real window is 6 o'clock to 11:15. Sometime between now and 6 or 7 hours from now, they can, well, I don't know if they've got, they can do it any quicker in Georgia than they can in Texas, so I'm saying 6 or 7 instead of 7 hours.
Right, they could decide tonight, or they could decide any time in the next 7 days whether to go through with the Georgia
institution. And they just start it all over again. So Georgia has a little different laws in Texas. If you get a stay past the window in Texas, they have to set you a new date. Georgia may be statutorily different. Swing that microphone over to Larry. Let me pick on him a while. Larry, Mr. Douglas, do you place any importance in they're taking the body to a black cemetery after they had killed him and broke him up into little bitty pieces?
I don't know where that could. There might have been. I just don't know enough about the case.
Well, you know, that cemetery would later play a very important role, because actually the site is a white cemetery divided by a metal fence from a black cemetery. And the action of the citizens in Jasper, both white and black, going out and removing that metal fence played very heavily as a symbol in the documentary made on this execution, this murder that has now been an execution.
And then when you consider the background of both King and Brewer, that very well could be. I don't know that it was, but it certainly could be. But the fact is that it probably played a lot in whether they got executed or not. What I'm saying is that James Byrd was killed by dragging behind a truck.
Horrible cat death.
The person driving that truck, though, was the person who got life and not death. That is Sean Allen Berry. He was the driver of the truck.
Mm-hmm. It was his truck.
And so if the cause of death was the driver of the truck, it makes you consider how the death penalty is administered. Normally, we used to think that, you know, if two people are involved in the shooting, well, they would seek death of the shooter, but not of the accomplices. But because of the backgrounds of Brewer and King, they're the ones who get the death penalty because of their background, not specifically only because of what they were convicted of doing, because the real actor in causing the death was actually the person who got life in prison, that is Sean Allen Berry.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've got Professor Longmire. We're going to have some time left over after we discuss with him, because Professor Longmire, Dennis, I can't. Dennis,
yes,
you're there.
I'm here.
I'm fumbling buttons in here. You would be amazed. Apparently, the execution is over for Lawrence Russell Brewer. He lived to be 43 years old and got no older.
That's correct.
And we have also received word that there has been a stay of execution in Georgia, and that is being covered on KPFT Broadcast Channel and HD1. This discussion you and I are having is being covered on executionwatch.org and KPFT HD3 channel. And this will be up in our archives shortly after the show is over and will remain there forever, apparently. You can ask your friends to listen up. Dennis, what did all this cost Jasper?
You know, it's a very difficult question to answer because I have never seen any specific figures. But if we just simply use the figures that were available, that we know that were available and fairly accurate in 1998, it cost Jasper over $2 million for each of the cases that they would prosecute as capital cases. And so we know that it was an extraordinarily expensive, and that's just simply talking about the monetary cost. No one can measure the social costs and the reputational costs that go forward with a crime like this, not to mention a sentence like the death penalty. But if we're only talking about dollars and cents, it probably cost them well over $6 or $7 million just to get to where we are today. Of course, there's still one more of the offenders on death row. And so it's going to cost a great deal of money in the end.
So actually, Mr. Brewer's becoming a volunteer as far as execution is concerned and not cooperating with his appellate attorneys, that wound up saving Jasper some money.
Well, I don't think it saved Jasper anything because the costs associated with the appeals are being borne by the state of Texas after the original trial. And so when the Dallas Morning News study went forward, they were principally talking about the costs associated with adjudicating and leading to a sentence of death. And so if we're only talking about Jasper, their costs are probably already exhausted. And as I understand it, one of the things that we always have to keep in mind is that when a county spends unexpected resources on something like a natural disaster or an execution, it has to divert resources that it had planned to spend somewhere else. And so I suspect it cost the children of Jasper and the county a lot of educational benefits that they could have otherwise had coming to them, and other county provided resources that had to be diverted because the expenses were being spent on the capital trial.
Well, now this case involves three defendants.
Correct.
Two of them went to the death chamber, and one of them got a life in sentence. Was it cheaper to deal with Mr. Berry's life sentence than it is to deal with Mr. King's and Mr. Brewer's death sentence?
Well, you will have to fill me in on the details of the particular case that ended up getting a sentence to life. I don't know if that was the result of a jury.
Jim, was that a plea, or what happened in that case?
Maybe I'll find out. They were all three tried as capital murders. It was not a plea.
They were all three tried
separately.
Separately.
Right.
It wasn't one trial. It was three separate trials.
Then it would have cost the same to try the individual who went to life without life. And then the other two. The only difference that would occur in the case with the defendant who ended up getting life without parole, or life, I'm not sure even when it would have been life, old capital life, is that the appeal.
Dennis, are you there? Hello, hello, Dennis, are you there?
Let me follow up on that. We're waiting to get him, Larry. Well, you're waiting to get him.
Yeah.
First off, the point that the county bears when they try a death penalty case, and the reason they're expensive because it takes a long time to pick a jury, and they got to pay two lawyers. You got to have two appointed lawyers, and it will take usually a month and a half just to pick a jury, and you got to pay them for every day for their work, and then you got to pay for the direct appeal. That's what the county bears. They bear the cost of the trial plus the cost of the direct appeal. Now, the difference between the two, the direct appeal and the sentence without, that was life, and it was not life without parole, it was a straight life.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference in that, it goes to the court of appeals as opposed to the court of criminal appeals. The transcripts, they have to pay for the transcripts. So the cost for both of them are going to be about the same, all three about the same. They're going to have about the same length of time on trying the case, same length of time on preparing the transcript.
Is every life sentence automatically appealed?
No, not automatically. You don't have to. It's only if death is done. But he may not. In this case, I don't know if Bert even with Barry even appealed, because the danger, if you get a life sentence on a death sentence, you appeal it and comes back, they can give you the death the second time around. So he may very well have waived his right to appeal. If he had any sense, he
caution.
Would.
Caution.
Yeah, because, see, there's only two punishments available, life and death.
Life and
he
death.
Gets the minimum. And if he appeals it and gets it reversed back, they can nail him for the death the next time
so
around.
So he will actually got a Texas life sentence in what year, approximately?
Well, he got a life sentence after Brewer was tried, so it was sometime after Brewer's trial.
Okay, so that's probably a life 40.
It was life 40.
Life 40.
Right.
So he's eligible for parole.
And I think that I've got the date written down here. I think it's
2038. 2030. So that's life 40. So right. he got a life 40 sentence. And prior to that, not too many years prior to that, life 20 was the...
That was it.
It was for everything over 60 was treated as a 60
right,
under the
right.
laws that I remember in Texas. Well, apparently we've lost Mr. Longmire. Is there anything interesting about this case?
Not really, because it's pretty... The thing that's interesting is that you don't have the typical writ activity following a death sentence, following all the exhausted appeals that you would have in normal cases. That part was interesting. And I think the reason, truthfully, the reason that the young man, Barry, gets off easier than the other two, number one, he's only 23 years of age.
Yeah.
And he's with King, who, although he's 24 year older, believe me, he's a lot older than that.
He's a lot more miles
That's
on
right.
King, yeah.
And then you got another older man who's 29. That's how old Brewer was at the time. And so what he could do and what he did at his trials, he tried to blame the other two. You know, a young kid, he had no prison record. See, the other two had prison records.
Yeah.
He had no prison record. He had two older, more influential guys he could blame things on. Had no record of criminal activity before. The other two did. And I think that's probably the reason that he ended up with a life sentence, although he was the driver of the truck, because you don't know what the other two were doing at the time the truck was being driven. They were inside the cab yelling, "Go more." And you have no idea what
they
were doing.
You have no idea what was going on in there.
So you don't know that. And I think the reason he ends up with a life sentence is because of his age. Two older guys he can blame things on, and no prison record, and no record of ever being involved in any type of racial groups like these other two were.
If my information were accurate,
did he have remorse?
You ever get close to the
Didn't
microphone?
Ask.
It's the hate crime aspect.
Right.
Yeah. If these people had actually, according to my source of information, but done time together at the Darrington, and they had, some, but Bird got killed there, we'd never know about it.
Right.
That's the prison thing. Swing the microphone over to Susan. Susan, what would you do if you caught this case?
Run to a foreign country as fast as
I can. No. I'm talking about as a lawyer.
Same thing. Run to a foreign country, grab my passport and leave.
And leave. And just not be available.
If they dragged me into the courtroom, I'd put a bag over my head.
Do you think you could represent somebody?
I remember this case very well.
Sure.
I remember when it happened. I remember.
I had friends with hand-painted signs on their car damning Jasper for its racism.
I remember seeing people in Jasper on TV, and I will say this. Clearly, this crime was horrific, and it's the cruelty and the inhumanity of this crime. When every person that heard about it felt hurt and sickened, okay? And people in Jasper, white, black, and even white supremacists were sickened by this crime because of the cruelty and the cowardly nature of it. Because you had three young men who...
Well, you know, we heard stories like
this. But Jasper, the people in Jasper made it very clear... At this time, when this happened, the people in Jasper made it very, very clear that they were all extremely hurt, just sickened by the crime. So Jasper might have a past or some, shall we say, KKK or racist activity. But in this particular case, what I saw coming out of Jasper was people were really, they were just in tears. Because this was a mentally retarded man. There was no reason for this. And in that sense, it's really a crime against humanity. When you hear about it, you hurt inside.
Larry, to swing it over to Barrister Douglas. Larry, black folks with good sense wouldn't have got in that truck, right?
There's a saying in the community that you just don't go out by yourself with a bunch of white boys in a remote area, because something bad might happen to you.
There's enough history of that.
There's civil a long, rights, long, civil long rights history histories. In the country. I was sharing with Jim that I'd gone out on a halibut fishing trip with some guys up in Alaska several years ago, and one guy caught a 293-pound halibut. One of the ladies had recorded the whole thing, and I was showing it to several of my friends because I'd caught a couple myself, and I'm pretty impressed by it. Most of the black guys, they'd watch the video, and they'd say, Larry, you went where? And I don't see any other black people on that boat
on
with
that
you.
Boat with you, right.
You're out there with those white. They will throw your behind out
and
in
feed
the ocean,
you to
and,
the
they,
halibut.
And they'll never find your body, or even another buddy of mine joked with a friend of his who was an astronaut and went up in the space shuttle with a bunch of white boys.
Yeah,
those white boys that's sort of a joke, but the joke is based in some terrible history in the country. A lot of people say you never should have gotten
will
in the car.
Will we ever get over this case?
That's really, I think, what the whole death sentence is about. It's about society trying to
flush it
over this case and the history behind the
but thing. In reality, Jasper has got a black eye that they will wear for eternity.
Black people hear about certain cities, Vidor, Jasper. If you're running low on gas in the middle of the night, maybe you might want to go someplace else. Even today.
One time I got a call from Houston Police Department that Aaron Brotherhood had put a hit on me, and that somebody in South Louisiana had picked up the contract and was on their way to Houston to kill me. And I said, well, thank you very much. I appreciate you calling. Because I'm pretty rough on the prison show, on the prison gangs. Gangs are not tough guys hanging together. Gangs are cowards being manipulated by weak people. And you say that enough times on television, on a radio show, and guys who listen to the radio show seem to want to get even. And so they said, well, what are you going to do about it? I said, nothing. They said, well, what do you want us to do about it? I said, nothing. And he said, you didn't understand me. I said that they had Aaron Brotherhood put a contract on you, and somebody's picked it up in South Louisiana. And he's on his way to Houston to kill you, and you don't want to do anything, and you want us to do anything? And I said, no. I said, tell you what will happen. If he gets that rusted out, clapped out Plymouth without a current inspection sticker through the speed traps of South Louisiana, it'll be a miracle.
Well, probably closer than that. Probably in Vidor, right?
Right. Well. The fact of the matter is, if he gets to South Louisiana speed traps without them finding the 38 automatic in the seat, it'll be a miracle. They could pull him over. He's got a prison record. They can find a gun. He's going to be in Angola for the next 10 years. If he makes it to Texas, he'll get to Vidor, Texas, and he'll pull off and he'll go to the first bar to brag about his contract and drink beer, and he'll get so drunk he won't be able to find Houston. Those are the only two options that are on the table. And I guess that's what happened, because he never showed up, and I never did get killed. But those boys in prison like you to think they're serious. And maybe in a pack like that time in Jasper, Texas, they were serious. But one-on-one, regardless of what tattoos they've got on their face, they ain't that tough. One-on-one, they're just screwed up, dumb, weak people dealing with inferiority complex about their race and everything else. The bird.
Are you looking for another contract, Ray?
No, the bird killing. The bird killing. Well, that's what they are.
I understand. I'm just curious.
I did time with people like that. I wasn't impressed in prison with those people, and I couldn't run.
I wouldn't have guessed that.
Had walls around us. So, but the thing about it is that racism is a form, a manifestation of ignorance. And actions you take motivated by your racism is ignorant. And then the logical question is, what you going to do? I think Mr. Brewer was smart enough to figure out that he was going to live on death row until they killed him. And he was trying to find the shortest way out of that trap. And so he did that. And thus we had to do this show. I don't like doing this show. This show will be broadcast on KPFT broadcast at a later date so the guys on death row can hear me say what I'm saying. And one of those guys may be Mr. King. He's otherwise occupied right now. I'm not too worried about him. He may have some friends out here. Well, send them on down. Gunding, I'm 71 years old. You kill me, you ain't getting nothing because I don't have that much left. So, there you go. You can waste your time on me and screw up somebody else's life, because if I get killed, they damn sure are going to investigate it, and you're going to go sit on where your buddies have been. The Execution Watch show has been produced now for several years. I want to thank my staff because they make it work. Jim Skelton, our legal advisor and educator. Susan Ashley, attorney, who brought the story of what happened in this case. Larry Douglas, who put it all into a special context. We appreciate Larry being on with us. Lawrence Russell Brewer died at the age of 43 and got no older. Dennis Longmire, professor of criminal justice at Sam Houston State University. We didn't get Gloria tonight because we couldn't get her phone. She's in some demonstration somewhere and couldn't hear it. We got from Dave Atwood. And a special guest star tonight was Dick Gregory. And our next execution is scheduled for October the 27th. Frank Garcia is scheduled to be executed. Our producer is Elizabeth Stein. Our technical director is Otis McClay. Our studio engineer tonight has been Doyle. And our theme music comes from Victoria Panetti. You can reach her at She Monster International /MySpace. Thank you.
Don't you know they're killing people? Don't you know they're killing people? Don't you know they're killing people?